What do you get when three comic and entertainment enthusiasts join together to discuss the topics that interest us all? Something that is truly larger than life. What's on the page?
On the screen.
And on our minds. Is front and center here on Larger Than Life with Dan Totora and co-hosts TJ Yeldon and Brian Yeldon.
Welcome here to Larger Than Life with Dan Tortora on LargerThanLifeDT.com and on the app LargerThanLifeDT.podbean.com/mobile. That's LargerThanLifeDT.podbean.com/mobile. Happy to be sharing with you today my conversation with Christopher McDonald, the actor that is known very well from Happy Gilmore and being Shooter McGavin. He's done so many different things in his career, and I am blessed to share our conversation with you right now.
Chris, looking at your career, first and foremost, just what you could say, I want to bring you all the way back to when you got started, if you remember that first gig and that first opportunity.
I do. You never forget your first. So my first was a movie called The Hearse, and it was with Joseph Cotten, Trish Vanderveer, and a dear friend that became a wonderful director, Dan Petrie. Actually, named Donald Petrie. He's the son of Dan Petrie, who's a great director also. But Donald Petrie and I have been friends ever since. And it was a horror picture, but it was I was a young kid out of college and happy for the work. And actually having a big resurgence of movies in the 80s and horror movies. So it's kind of cool.
When you look back on the decision, you know, to become an actor, was it something that you had already known for a long time? It was something that you wanted to do, or did it kind of just come upon you at that moment? I mean, what can you say about wanting it from when you were a kid, or maybe it was just something that you kind of worked your way into?
Well, my whole family was in the business of show. My father used to be an actor. My mother was a television anchor, weather woman, and seeing that my father couldn't really do it because he had seven kids made me sort of want to do it, but they also wanted me to be a dentist. So I went to college to be a dentist.
Yeah.
So I'm 2 years in college, I'm thinking, I got to get out of these labs. So I need something else to round up my schedule. And I walked into the theater, and they said, oh, yeah, we'll use you. Got into this great play. Just blew me away how much I enjoyed it. Because I was the guy that was always in the pit playing in the band for my brothers and sisters when they were in musicals. I was a pretty good trumpet player. But so I never really was on stage much. And then I did this in college, and it was Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? And it was a fantastic production, and I was hooked. So I told my parents that I wanted to be an actor. I was going to change my major to English because there was no theater at my school, which is Hobart College, not far from here, about 120 miles from here. Anyway, that's what happened, and they were not that happy about it. But in hindsight, I think I chose right. I did, because it's been very good to me. I work very hard at it. I say yes to a lot of things because I think working is an honorable thing to do. My work, I think I passed on to my children. I got it from my parents. So, I am picky. I won't do really crappy movies if I can help it. But, you know, nobody ever knows what's going to be a hit or what's going to, you know, just be a disappointment. But sometimes disappointments have longevity, and then they just kind of pop up later on in someone's career. They go, I love that movie. It was unappreciated at that time. So, I don't know. I just love the process, and I'm now doing stage, so it's just trying to mix it all up. It's been quite good for me.
Being on stage now, what made you want to be a part of that at this point in your career to get back on stage?
Well, I'd done about 35 plays in the Los Angeles area and in vicinity, and in about, you know, six, eight, maybe 15 in college. In those 2 years, I finished out, and I really loved it. It's the most immediate response from an audience is something you never get on a film or television set, unless you're doing, you know, situation comedies, which are rarer and rarer nowadays. And it is where the actor really has the most control. curtain up, and you're off. And it's white hot. And there's no retakes. There's no, can we do that again? If you flub a line, your partner will pick it up. If you jump a few lines, you'll come around. I've done this for other people where I come back, so the information needs to be said, and then we kind of pick it up and go again. But we do, you kind of, the artistry is doing it seamlessly. But for the most part, 99.9% of the time, it's done just right. And it's always different every time because of the audience. The audience makes a huge difference.
Bring me into a memory you have of maybe flubbing a line. Do you have any that stand out where somebody had to kind of pick you up and bring you back?
Yeah, I was in high school, actually, and I was doing the... I was the... receiving an award, and I had to... I started this speech, because we're in a play at the time, and I went blank, because my parents were out there, all my teachers were out there. I was like, oh, no. So I turned back, and was like, and since it wasn't like live on stage or anything, I haven't done that yet, knock wood. It was live on the stage at my high school, and I just turned around and asked one of the girls, and she was so flummoxed, who was my partner in the scene, she was so flummoxed, she just kind of like turned beet red, and I was kind of, you know, laughing it off at the time, but it was an uncomfortable moment that probably lasted about 8 seconds. It felt like 8 minutes.
Yeah.
So, but of course, we got through it. There was a big laugh. And the funny thing about the line, it was, I'm not the man of a forgetting kind, or something to that level, which was like, yeah, you are. So it was kind of funny.
When you look at, obviously, a movie that is very notable in its history and everything that Adam Sandler has done, when you look at Happy Gilmore and obviously being Shooter McGavin and having that character be a character that people have remembered since the day the movie came out, is that the one that is most recognizable when you have people walk by? Is that the one that's typically their go-to, or are there other ones that kind of come out?
Well, typically, yes. That's a good way to say it. That's typically the one they go to. It's the one that has the most followings at sporting events, and people who just love that kind of, that kind of funny Adam Sandler, Judd Apatow humor, which is most of America. It has longevity. It's almost generational now, where a father will say, I showed it to my kids now, and the kids are like, you know, nine. I'm going, it might be a little young, but that's okay, Dad, your call.
Yeah.
But people have loved it so much, and then they show it to their, you know, the kids will tell their grandparents about it, and they'll watch it, and they go, it's very funny on me. So it's gone on, and the shooter love that I get, I call it shooter love now, it's got a term. A guy just wrote a rap called the Shooter Rap, where he does the whole movie, but you know, highlights of the movie,
yeah.
And he works the dialogue into the rap. It's kind of genius. Other people have written, you know, songs about Shooter, Shooter, because everybody can recognize that narcissistic, full of himself, guy who just thinks he's the bee's knees, who's really gets it handed to him at the end, which is kind of funny. So that's been fantastic. But even this morning, people have come by and talked about TV shows that I did back in the early 90s. And a guy just picked up something I did in the 90s was from, you know, an episode I did of Star Trek and Next Generation. And people come up and ask for Grease 2 pictures. Guy just asked me for a picture for the Iron Giant, which I don't have, but I will get for next time. So these things are kind of fun because people remind me that the things that we do as actors really affect people and can affect them in a really positive way when they're going through really hard times, where they'll just kind of watch something over and over again, be it physical or, you know, mental or, you know, a death in the family or something. And if it helps them, that's an ancillary gift, I think, that's the power of entertainment, though.
Before I let you go, keeping with that movie, with going back to Happy Gilmore, to be the arch nemesis of Adam Sandler's character, what was the dynamic like working with him?
Well, working with him was a blast. He's a very, very bright guy, and we basically would laugh and giggle like kids off screen. But on screen, I had to keep that, you know, tough guy thing going on, and how much I hated him. But for the most part, it's been... It was an absolute joy. We'd laugh in his trailer. He's surrounded by his bros all the time, and so... There was also a part of me that wanted to basically keep a little distance because I did hate him so much, but that was right away, that was broken down, so we became very close and stuff. So he's a great guy. I haven't worked with him since. He says, "Dude, you're always going to be Shooter." I said, "God, I could do 100 other things, but all right." So I do love him. I thank him for this thing. I knew it was going to be a big deal. I didn't know it was going to be this big a deal, but I'm grateful for it.
Who did you channel for the narcissistic Shooter McGavin? Did you look to anybody from your experience or something that you had seen before?
Well, I basically saw it in the lines, but I did sort of, at that time, the Shark, Greg Norman, was the man. And I don't know him personally, but he had this kind of like real put together slick arrogance about him. So I tried to wear as many of his clothes as I could in the show and have that idea that my jet was waiting for me, that kind of thing. So you kind of think in those kind of terms, but mostly it's in the text. So I pulled it out of the scene itself, because it was, it's comedy. It's not. It's got to be super real. Can't be just, or else it'll fall flat in its face. It'll be dramatic rather than. With comedy, you have to just tweak it a little bit more to make it so important. It's such a big deal. Whether it's in life, we just laugh it off. Like, yeah, all right, I'll get it next time. But I did, the couple times I did do that in the movie, I think it helped, because you can't go to that point all the time, or else you're painted into a corner. But it worked out well, and they play it on TV in a loop, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
So I get recognized every day. It's crazy.
And lastly, just what advice you can give to people that are looking to follow those dreams, and whether it be acting or whatever it may be, in the world we live in today, with Twitter and Facebook and different things, people sometimes feel hindered because of bullying or people saying you can't. How would you handle the youth of today looking for their dreams and following them?
It's one of the most motivating things that ever happened to me was, and I come from a couple lakes over from here, in upstate New York, western New York, and they said, "Oh, you're going to Hollywood to be an actor, huh? See you in 6 months, big shot." I took that as a real challenge. I said, okay, so the naysayers are out there. There's no way I'm going to come back here in 4 to 6 months with my tail between my legs. I'd rather starve. And with that kind of an attitude, I outworked everybody. So if you just put yourself, put your nose to the grind, I think everybody will get a shot. Just be ready when it comes.